The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
They had one more day to rest. We were really in trouble to build the team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Oh, sweaty palms. Of course, you guys know what it's like, but that was nervy.
The OTB Brief, online every morning from 7 a.m. on offtheball.com, the Go Loud app, and everywhere you get your podcasts.
The Off the Ball Podcast Network.
Oh, the shape up will care. You've got all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you except for those two have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
And you're very welcome along to this week's Team 33 and a call here with you for the next hour or so. Remember, if you want to listen back to this show at the end of it, go to offtheball.com/podcast. You can find us in the OTB Podcast Network. Just look up Team 33. You can also find us on Twitter at Team 33. That's all spelled out in letters. And if you want to watch any of our beautiful stuff, go to youtube.com/offtheball. We're continuing our LOI Legends series tonight. And what a legend we have, Owen Heary, a man who spent his entire career playing in the League of Ireland, won multiple titles with Shelburne and Bohemians as well, and had some really interesting stories to tell about his career and also post-career as a football manager. If you don't know the Sligo Rovers story, then stay tuned. That's coming up a little bit later on. The Bundesliga is coming back tomorrow. Are we all excited for football returning? I know I am. Match of the day, Borussia Dortmund versus Schalke, the derby, which they actually didn't think was going to go ahead, but they're going to go ahead with it now. Hopefully we'll get a good game and hopefully we'll all turn into Bundesliga nerds. But first we are going to dive into some League of Ireland action because Owen Heary joins me on the line. Owen, how are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm grand. I'm still walking away from home, you know, managing to do exercise in the morning, me and the wife, and then I live right beside the Phoenix Park, so myself, the wife and the kids can go over to the Phoenix Park, and you know, it's the biggest park in Europe, so there's plenty of areas to go where you're social distancing from everyone.
The park was closed for a while there, wasn't it?
No, not the Phoenix Park, no. They only closed some of the main entrances in for the cars, but in terms of people going in, they can go in, like as I said, you know, I'm right beside and I've been in it every day since the lockdown, you know, with 2 kilometres I was able to venture over, and even now more so with the 5 kilometre rule. So it's you know, same park as size of the park that I haven't seen in a long time, so it's great to get out and get in the air, and the weather being the way it was over the last couple of weeks, it's been terrific.
So if you're near enough to Phoenix Park, then you can't have moved too far away from your home in Cabra, have you?
No, I'm just, as I said, I still live here now, just outside Cabra, so still there and right beside the Phoenix Park. And you know, Michael Higgins is my neighbour, more or less. So, it's great, you know, in that way that I'm still able to walk. I'm one of the lucky ones that are still able to walk, and I'm still able to get out and get some good fresh air and able to do walkouts and a bit of walking, as I say, in the Phoenix Park, which is enjoyable.
So over the last couple of weeks, we've been chatting to a load of different League of Ireland legends. And last week, Mark Quigley was our guest, the former St. Pat's and Sligo Rovers player. And he spoke a lot about his beginnings in football. And it was more or less playing football on the streets in and around Mountjoy Square and where he's from, around Sheriff Street. And I think you had a similar enough situation when you were growing up in Cabra.
Yeah, in the estate, I mean, you know, we had a 5-side pitch. Tarmac, a 5-side pitch, and you're sort of constantly playing games on it from morning to night, you know, until the floodlights used to go off. And that was, you'd still try to play, but it's obviously too dark then, you were called in. But you'd play roads, you know, so the road I was on, you play against the avenue, or you play against the walk, or whatever other road there is. And you'd have competitions, you know, you'd turn up and there could be 40, 50 people all looking to play games, and you'd have tennis boys on a 5-side pitch. And it was just constant football, you know, that was going on in and around the estate. So it was great, you know, and I suppose it's a lot different now. You don't see kids out playing as much. Back then, you'd have five sides running in different parts of Tabor or even in town that you'd go over and try win, or seven sides happening up in the bogies in Tabor. So, you know, it was good times because you were getting out, you were socialising with a lot of people that you would have grown up with and throughout the years. And I still see some of them now, and, you know, you've chatted about those times gone by. But it was great. Nowadays, kids are more indoors playing their video games and not out as much as I said, and not on the streets playing football. And I think it's a loss of society there.
And when you were playing football, would it have been against lads your own age, or would you have been coming up against bigger lads as well?
Oh, bigger lads, older lads. You know, as I said, I was young, and, you know, you'd be put on the team, you could be have men playing on there as well. Like, so, you know, I played on teams with my dad, like, throughout the years, and I 15, I was playing up in the Phoenix Park, up in the 15 acres, on a man's team. So it was every Sunday, you'd be turning up on Saturday, turning up in the 15 acres. I don't know if you know it, but there's about 20 odd pitches there. Don't ask me why they call it the 15 acres with so many pitches and such a wide area of space. But, you know, you'd have all teams turning up Saturday morning, Sunday morning. People are turning up just with boots looking for games, and it's just a lot of games going on at the time, and then everyone after it, they walk off and they go to the pub, obviously different pubs that were sponsoring them. But it was great. Like, you know, as I said, I was only young, but I was playing with lads my own age and men a lot older than me on the team as well. So it was a good upbringing, to say the least.
So who actually spotted you playing in that team that signed you for Kilkenny City?
Well, it was John Cleary. John Cleary done a course up in the Phoenix Park, and he invited myself and a couple of lads from the estate up and do a bit of training on it, and we did. And he asked me and another lad, Eamon George, would we be interested in going down to Kilkenny. And me, I knew nothing about the League of Ireland at the time, but Kilkenny, you know, sounded like a big team. And, you know, when my dad said to me, he said, look, go and see how you like, and if you enjoy it, you know, there's no problem, keep going and doing it and see what it takes you. So myself and Eamon were told to meet over at the West County for a match. I think it was Sunday morning we were to meet. Tom put on my dad's short tie. Obviously, I was 16 years of age, didn't have a short and tie in my school uniform, but we went, and on the bus bringing down, and different experiences. I said, you'd have the likes of John Rayner and, you know, and Chris Madden. We'd have obviously John Kelly, centre forward. So you'd have a lot of players that were, I suppose, very experienced players that were maybe some were coming to the end of their career and some were in the middle of their career. But it was travelling down, and when I got to Kilkenny, I seen the pitch, and as I said, I was used to playing on pitches in the Phoenix Park, so this was a massive step up, massive pitch. And, you know, we were told to watch, obviously, the first game, and I think they played in a friendly against Cardiff. We won 3-2, and then, you know, we sort of got the bug from there, and, you know, watching the games, and then John put me into a couple of games, and it was a big experience, big step up for me. But I enjoyed it, you know, and as I said, I got a half season there, which was delighted. At the end of the year, I think John and the Dublin lads were all let go, but I was one of the only Dublin lads that was asked to stay and continue on down there. But home farm, I was on a home farm football course at the time, and they asked me would I be interested in joining them.
And when you're with Kilkenny, obviously that's a high enough standard that you're playing. What was the reaction from the more senior players in the team to this teenager coming in and taking up their spots?
Yeah, well, the rightful at the time, he wasn't too happy. He was coming to the end of his career, but he wasn't too happy the fact that that John had put me in ahead of him in a couple of games. And I think I played 16, 17 games that year as rightful. And you can obviously expect from a senior player, you know, they coming to the end of his career but wanting to finish out playing, that he's travelling all the way down to Kilkenny and not getting a game. So he wasn't too impressed with it, you know. But I said, I remember games where I've seen fellas, you put an elbow on another fella's face and his teeth coming out, and you're like, well, what have I got myself into in this scenario? You know, what's happening here? I'm 16 years of age and these are like butchers going around and they're milling each other. But it was such a different standard, a different step up that I would have been used to. But looking at how physical it was, as I say, these are good pros that were played at the highest level and just probably come to the end of their career. But the fourth division was tough at the time, you know. So looking back at it now, I'd say, you know, the bits I can remember of it was great experience, nervy experience, and trying to get a foothold in a team that I wanted to establish myself in and go on and win games.
Yeah, and it's Dermot Keighley that's in charge of Home Farm at the time. He signed you for Home Farm, and he also signed you later on for Shelburne. So he obviously had a keen eye for you.
Well, believe it or not, it wasn't Dermot at the time. Martin Bailey was in charge at the time, and it was Liam Toohey that asked me to sign for Home Farm. He was running the course with Ryan O'Shea, and Liam asked me, you know, to play, and I said, yeah, because obviously being there, it was close enough to me home. I could travel a lot easier. I think he offered me £30 at the time or something to this effect, you know. So I managed to play the games, had a good season. Dermot Keighley was in the stands watching, and Dermot was manager of Finn Harps and asked me to go up and sign for them, which I didn't. And I thought then when Dermot became manager at Home Farm that he wouldn't have been too impressed and probably wanted to get rid of me because of the fact that I turned him down signing for Finn Harps. But he didn't, thankfully. You know, he kept me there, and I had a good season, a few seasons under him. And then Dermot went to Shell, and believe it or not, he didn't take me at first. He took Stephen Gifford, Damien Marr, and Graham Doyle, I think it was. He took two Shell. I was one of the ones that was left, and it wasn't until a couple of months later that he asked me would I be interested in going down and signing for him, just to put pressure, believe it or not, on Desi Baker. It was playing outside right at the time, and Dermot signed me as an outside right for Shell.
And when you get the call up to Shelburne, is that a immediate yes? Obviously, you want to sign for one of the biggest clubs in Dublin at the time?
Yeah, it was. I'd actually signed, and then Bowles asked me to sign for them. And at the time, I signed the contract. I didn't know too much about the contract. Dermot actually, believe it or not, gave me a few drinks, probably got me twisted and ended up making me sign. I hadn't a clue what I signed for. I had to ring him the next day. Bowers came in at that time as well, and one of them asked me to meet down in Bohemian Bar down on the corner of Frisborough. And we had no mobile phones, obviously, at that time. So I went down to meet Larry Corby, and I was sitting there, and this man walked by me, said hello, kept on walking, and I was sitting there for an hour. And I rang my mum on one of the pay phones, and I said, look, I've never been sitting here, and no one's turned up. And she said, well, some fellas had to ring in the house and said he couldn't find you. So he's on his way up to the house. So as I went back, I was sitting there, and the man who actually said hello to me in the pub was the fellow who turned up to me, house Larry. So I was giving him a bit of stick for years after that, saying he didn't even know the look of me, and yet he wanted to sign me. But, you know, unfortunately, I was signed for Shells at the time, and I followed Bowles. So I was a bit, you know, a bit peeved off about it because I always had in my mind to go and play for Bowles. But as I went to Shells, I didn't get in at first at Shells, and we were struggling a fair bit, you know, during the league. And I remember we had a meeting, and the likes of Damien Marr, Stephen Gifford, and Graham Doyle had been playing, but I wasn't playing. And Pat Fennan had a go at players. Like, he said, you're not good enough for this team, and you're not good enough, and you're doing this. And Damien asked her opinion, came to me, and I said, look, I don't care what he thinks, I'm not good enough. And it'll prove a point that I am. And I think the story is then that the three lads got let go, and I was the only one that ended up staying over the course of the many years that I played there.
Yeah, and the team that you came into at Shelburne, it has a list of names of some of the best players that have played in the league. I know I spoke to Tony Sheridan a few weeks ago about this, and he actually felt that this 90s Shelburne team was actually better than the European one that you played in a few years later. Pat Fenlon is a man that will come up later on in your career as well as your manager. What was he like as a player in the dressing room?
Pat was a very determined player. You know, he was one that would stay back after training and practice. He was practicing free kicks. He'd have Nick Neville out on the, you know, over the corner flag, crossing balls in, and Pat was always looking to connect on the volley and, you know, and try to score goals with him. He was doing it with his left foot, his right foot, from all different angles. And because Pat used to give me a lift all the time as well, I'd end up having to stay back. And I would watch him. I'd probably chase half his football for him to get them back so he could keep practicing. But he was Thompson's, you know, focus as a player. And I think another big player that came in that year that Dermot Keighley signed was the likes of Paul Doolan. And Paul had won numerous trophies, and, you know, he was coming again to the latter stage of his career, but he brought professionalism to it. And a lot of good players there. And I, you know, Tommy Sheridan, brilliant player, Stephen Gagan, Declan Gagan, you know, Greg Hossel, so many good talented players. But at the time, they probably didn't have the Dermot Keighley you know, to push them on to win leagues, or to say, look, this is how you go and win leagues. This is how you have to be professional and do it. Like, and that was something that maybe the Shells are missing, you know, going back in the 90s. They say they were winning cups, but they weren't winning leagues. And I think that's why Ollie Bourne let Damian Richardson go and got Dermot Keighley in, and it was proven probably the right call, because Dermot got that team then and pushed on a little bit more, got rid of a few players, brought in some good players, and end up winning the league with it.
Yeah, you mentioned that the first couple of seasons you struggled. It was not so much a struggle as it was just disappointment coming at the end, just falling up short, really. So when you eventually do get Dermot Keighley in and things start going better, what's the difference? Is it just a step up in professionalism?
Well, I think so, but I wasn't there when Damian Richardson was managed. I came just after that, you know, and talking to the players at the time, they were saying that they were more focused on winning cups, because they'd won so many in a row that the focus on was trying to win the 3 in a row of cups or the 4 in a row of cups. Whereas the focus, even though they got to the last stage of the league, down to the last day, it was, I think they had a choice of players being rested for the cup final, or not rested, should I say, they were suspended. So they had a choice of being suspended for the last league game of the season or cup final, and I think they ended up being suspended for the league game, which probably cost them the league. And they went on then, and you know, into the cup final, thinking to win it. But I think what Dermot brought was a professionalism. You know, Dermot wouldn't like someone turning up on the drink in training. Wouldn't like fellas drinking during the week. You know, he, by all means, if you played on a Friday and you put in a shift and things like that, you can go for a few drinks after. Never an issue with Dermot. But what he wanted to see was 100% in training and 100% on the pitch. You know, he wasn't into the half-arse fella coming up and not putting 100% training or ringing up with excuses why he couldn't make training. It was just wholehearted, and that was it. And, you know, it showed, I suppose, with the success that he did have.
You still would have been quite young at this stage, and there would have been a couple of younger players coming through alongside you. Would you have noticed the difference between the attitude of players of your generation and, say, the players of the likes of Pat Fenlon and Tony Sheridan's generation, in the difference in the way they approach the games?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're young, you just think, I'll turn up and play the game, and, you know, win or lose, it doesn't really matter. But I think when the likes of Pat Fenlon, Tony McCarthy, Pat Scully, when you had those players saying, and you went to Shell, it was a case of, you have to win. It wasn't good enough to say, lose a game and then lose another game. You can maybe lose one, but once you bounce back and won the next, you know, the crowd were happy, the club were happy, but it was a team where it was success driven, that you have to win. And that was, I can understand why Pat had a goal at the time, saying that he's not good enough to be at the club, because the standard of, you could go into like a home farm, we could lose games week in, week out. No one really cared, you know, apart from the players, obviously, or the manager. But no one had the pressure on them the same way you would as Shell. It was all about, you have to win. And that was driven into us. And I think there's a lot of players that came to Shell that weren't able for that pressure. And, you know, weren't able, as I say, and moved on, weren't able to hit the success that he would have had at other clubs, if that makes sense to you. You know, the players that stood out in smaller clubs and done extremely well, but when they've gone to a bigger club and try to put in the shift and the work rate week in, week out, and it wasn't there because the pressure they were under to produce that, you know, from their own fans, from the club itself, from the manager. If you weren't able to handle that, then you went too long at Shelburne.
You obviously won a fair few leagues at Shelburne later on under Pat Fenlon as manager, but how big of a breakthrough was the 99 season that you just won the league?
The 99-2000, the double.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was massive. But yeah, because we won it handy enough, I think, at the end. And I remember the cup final played in Tolga, the first game, and, you know, it wasn't a great game, scorching day. But I remember Steve Williams coming off and passed to say at the end, but, you know, went in, that was it. Tolga had won the cup. And in the replay, Brian Doyle, who Pat had a go off and let go from Shell, ended up signing for Bowden, and had a piece in the paper that, you know, they're going to win the cup and Pat won't score and things like that. Pat had only come back, I think, with a broken leg as well at the time, or an injury at the time, and he scored a winning goal in the cup final. And we knew as a team back then that if we went 1-0 up, it's very rarely we conceded a goal, you know, in the 99-2000 season. And we look at our record, I think we conceded 13 goals over the course of the year. And so we knew that just you know, once we managed to get one ahead, then we had a 99% chance of winning that game. And it was a great double because I was young, as you said, and it was my first league medal. You know, you don't think too much of it at the time because, as I said, we walked away with the league. But when you have the double, it's like a big achievement because it's in the papers the next day. People are talking about it. You're getting pictures with the trophies. It's just a fantastic feeling.
I spoke to Pat Fenlon as well last week on the show, or 2 weeks ago, sorry, on the show. People are going to start accusing me of being Shelburne bias here, but it was about his career overall, and he spoke about his move into management from being a player and how he got to grasp with almost treating some of his former teammates as now people who he has to be in charge of. Did he instantly grab the attention of the dressing room once he was made manager, or was that a bit difficult for him?
No, Pat was always one of the leaders in the dressing room. You know, he always had that authority, like the Paul Doolan, Pat Scully. You know, all the senior players sort of had that authority in the dressing room. And I remember when Pat was thinking about taking the job, and he rang me up and he was saying, "What do you think? You know, is it too big a job for me to take?" So, you know, and I just think he said to him then, I said, "Why not take this job? Because it's one of the biggest jobs in Irish football, and if it doesn't work out within grand, you can go down the ladder, whereas if you start down the bottom of the ladder, you might never get the opportunity to manage Shelburne." You know, being having a good squad, I mean, all you had to do was have one or two players to it. But the hard part for Pat was there was players that he would have played alongside with and good friends of his along the way, where he probably had to tell them, "Look, at the end of your career, it's time to move on." And I think that was the extremely difficult part for Pat at the start, because, you know, he was used to going out with, say, myself, the Gage, and, you know, Freddie Davis, all of us going over to for a drink after the match, and we'd all be together. And then all of a sudden he had to distance himself from all of us because we were players and he was the manager, and he had to establish that, you know. So I think that was the difficult part for him. It was basically to push us away and to drop half his team, half his mates that he played alongside for years. But he done it, you know, and he had to do it. And, you know, as much as players might have had a go at him back then and might not like it, it was the right thing to do for him and for Shells at the time.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the 90s that Shells very much would have been winning cups but not leagues, and then eventually you do win that league in 1999-2000, and you just go on to win the league again in 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004 and 2006. As well as that, you just have a good European run as well. So was there an extra step up again under Pat Fenlon as manager?
Yeah, much more professionalism. And I'm sure Pat has probably told you as well that he learned a good professional side from Dan McKinney. But then it came to the stage where the football was changing, the science was starting to come into it a little bit. Couldn't do as much, but he needed to get rid of players that were, I won't say they wouldn't have been as fit as other players were at that stage, where they go out on a Saturday night, might have a few on a Sunday. So the football was changing in terms of you couldn't go out as much, and you had to be more determined and more dedicated to playing the sport, because it was starting to become a job rather than a hobby. And I think Pat had to bring that professionalism to him, and he didn't get the best of starts either, Pat. I know he was under, he finished third in the fourth season, and he was under a lot of pressure, went out in the European game against Hibs of Malta when we were cruising. I think they scored in the 90-odd minute to go through and away goals, which put Pat under a lot of pressure from fans and all of that at that time. But, you know, he managed to bounce back. He got rid of players, as I said, and he brought in some good quality players, young Wes Houlihan, Jason Bourne. They all started coming onto the floor. Like, and you've seen the team sort of develop and change over time. And I was getting that little bit older. But as I said, I learned off the likes of Paul Dillon and Mick Neville that sort of professionalism to bring through. So when Jay came in, or Wes came in, or Richie Ford came in, straight away I was telling them, "Look, this is the level you have to go up to. This is to be professional, to win stuff. This is what is expected at Shell." So, you know, once they had that coming in, because I was young, they were young, they were ready to take it on board. And you've seen the success that they've had throughout their careers, you know, from coming from the likes of Bray, or whether coming from Stella, you know, into a club where you're expected to win things, and then they go on and they hit that success, and they have it throughout their lives, throughout their careers.
Yeah, and I mentioned the European run in 2004. We actually did a documentary not too long ago on it. What are your memories from the European run? First up is Rajkovic, who went away to Iceland and got a result. Hajek Split was obviously a bigger result again, but then Deportivo La Coruña, who had been in the Champions League semi-final the year before that, they're obviously a massive obstacle in your way of getting into the Champions League. What are your memories from the Lansdowne Road game, first of all?
Well, from the Lansdowne Road game, the memories of leaving, we left City West Hotel driving up and you're seeing thousands of fans going for the game, you know, wearing Rovers jerseys, Bowers jerseys, Pats, Derry, all the league, every club in the league had people there with their jerseys on, you know. So there's something special about European nights in Ireland, that supporters from all different clubs are going down to watch the game and supporting the Irish team. I don't think you'll get that in any other country in the world. I mean, can you imagine Liverpool fans going down and watching United playing the Champions League and cheering them on? It doesn't happen, and that's something that is unique, I think, to Irish football over here. The game itself, I remember the lead up to the game where we're talking about them, we're doing a bit of video analysis and things on them, and Pat's telling me that Luke Hay possibly isn't travelling because Real Madrid had bid 18 million for him at the time, something like that. So, great, delighted. Hopefully he doesn't come. And then Pat gets the travel list of who did go, and he's on the travel list. And Pat goes, oh, look, he might be there, but no problem, Jeff. And then you're thinking, there's a lot of nerves going through it. You've got through the Hajek Split game, a lot of nerves building up to this, because as you said, they're one of the biggest teams in the world, and the last thing you want to do would be humiliated or be the one to make the mistake that loses the game, or, you know, things like that are always going through your mind. But for years, all I've done is I've taken all the negativity before the game, and so you put it into a box and put it to the side and say, right, these things ain't going to happen. So you're more focused on the player that you're playing against, on the team that you're playing against, on your job, on other people's jobs, and trying to get everyone to go on the one, to drive on and do the one thing and try to get a result in the game. And we did that, you know. Obviously got a bit of luck at times, but coming away with a 0-0 draw against one of the best teams in Europe, you know, was magnificent for the League of Ireland team. And, you know, it's one that we look back. But, you know, we had a chance. I remember across the ball into Jay Bourne. And, you know, if you put a ball into Jay Bourne and he has a striking goal, 9 times out of 10, he's hitting that perfectly and it's going into the net. And unfortunately, the one time that he does get that chance and he just miskicks it, you know, which is unlike Jay. But, as I said, that could have been a game changer for us at home. And if we won the game 1-0, what a marvelous result that would have been. But it wasn't to be. I mean, we drew 0-0, which, again, is a good result against a top team.
Yeah, and if you watch back the highlights of this game, one thing that is evident is Wes Hoolahan, because every time that Shelburne have the ball, he's coming looking for it. And Pat Fenlon also highlighted that he was a standout player in that game, and he was just so brave in his decision making, even at such a young age. Can you remember what did Wes Hoolahan stand out for you in that team? Because if you look at the team names on some of the names on that team sheet, you have Joseph Ndo, Alan Moore, who had played in England, as you mentioned, Jason Byrne playing up front as well. So it's an exceptionally talented squad. So did Wes stand out at that age?
Yeah, Wes stood out when he first came into China. You know, he was a little tricky player. Loved the ball on his feet. A typical inner city lad where constantly playing football, wanting the ball all the time. You know, like Tommy Morgan, the likes of him, the likes of Matt Quigley, he said, always loved the ball to their feet. You know, Wesley was that player when he first came in. And I think I read a piece a while ago when Wesley was talking about when he played over here as well, his first time in the training. And I went in and smashed him and just told him to go up and go on. And he said he learned a lesson from that. You know, you know, years later, we find out that Wes needed contacts, and there's a story where himself and Richie and himself are driving to the games, and he says, I have to stop at the chemist to get contacts. And we stopped in Cabaret, and we pointed him into the chemist for him to run in, and he actually ran into the butcher's, and the butcher fella had to tell him next door. So that shows you how blind Wes was. But as I said, he was just different class. As you say, you've mentioned quality players there. Alan Moore, for me, was probably one of the best runners passed on in the course of that European run. He was absolutely excellent. He allowed then Wesley to do what he had to do. You know, Stewie Bourne sitting and Mark and Valeron, Stewie's job on the whole day was to follow him everywhere. So that allowed Wesley to go and express himself. Joseph Ndo as well, another player, loved it to his feet. We just let Wesley go and do his thing. And, you know, he was brilliant in the whole European run. But Wesley was brilliant from the first days, for Shelbourne. He'd been excellent, you know, and you could see that his career probably went a long way around to get to where he was. But even when he played for Ireland, the excitement people got for him, you know, when he played, always looking to do positive things with the ball, wasn't negative, always wanted the ball to his feet, driving forward, seeing a pass, score goals as well. So, and that was at a young age, he was doing all this, you know. So I'd like him to see him get more caps than he did. I think he would have deserved that. But I'd like to see him play at a higher level in the Premiership than when he eventually got there, because he is an excitement. If he was, I keep saying, if he was English or Spanish, people would have raved about him a lot more in this country. But the only rave about him when he made that step up to the Premiership was seeing how good he really was. But as a player played alongside him, I've seen that from day one, how good he was.
And you go over to Spain, to Deportivo, and again, they are one of the biggest teams in Spain at the time. Is that a special night, a night you haven't experienced since?
Yeah, that's a proper European night in my eyes. As soon as we got off the plane, we had the papers, we had camera crews, all following us around in our face from the moment we got off to the moment that we leave Deportivo. I mean, they were just everywhere. You couldn't walk outside without them taking pictures, or even when we went on our shows, or following us around. We had Sky News Ireland there as well, doing the same thing. All our families were over. Ollie Bourne was brilliant for the families. We booked the whole hotel, you know, for the families and all to be there, and ourselves then in a different hotel. So we didn't have to be ringing home and trying to organise flights for them or tickets. Ollie done the whole thing for us. And I'm proud that I had my oldest son over there at the time. And he done mascot, which is a proud moment for me. He walked down to the pitch over there, he's 4 years of age, and was a picture of the whole team, and he's standing there with us. Like, so, you know, it's a proud moment for me. And the thing is, once the mascot sort of is done, you know, I let his mat take him, and that's it. You just focus on the game. So, you know, it was a proper, as I said, European game, European night, the music, everything that the space that you see on the telly for the Champions League night. That was there, that, you know, when we played Deportivo.
This was obviously a massive thing for Shelburne at the time, and it's probably one of the best Champions League runs that any Irish team have gone on. And over the next couple of years, you have some serious battles for the league as well with Bohemians, and I suppose 06 would probably be the most famous one because of Stewie Byrne's interview after it. Which is bigger for you? Was the league form, is that something you remember more, winning the leagues in Ireland, or is that Champions League run probably your highlight from the Shelburne career?
I'll definitely win the leagues. You know, for me, setting out at the start of the year, we'd sit down and have a meeting, and what's the goal for the year? It was always the league. You know, if you win the cup, it's great, but the league has to be the priority. And When we lost, say, the league in the last game of the season, and you see Dan Murray picking the league up for Cork, or you see another captain picking the league up for Cork, I'd be sitting there, and, you know, frustration would be building in you. You wanted to get back playing as quick as possible because you wanted to be, you know, wanting to get your hands back on the league trophy. And that was the thing, I think, that drove Shells on. You know, even when we signed and passed signed the likes of Glenn Crowe, Colin Hawke and Bobby Ryan, everyone expected us to walk away with the league that year, and we didn't. You know, it is a tough league back then. In my eyes, you had teams like at the start of the season, Shells would be tipped to win the league, Bowes would be tipped, you'd have Pats to be tipped, Cork, all from different reporters, all from different analysts of the game, to be all picking different teams. So that shows you how tough it was to come out on top. So it was something that drove us on. You know, you'd see in the paper that Shells are tipped to come second or third, and you're like, well, we have to prove them wrong. You know, there was always that determination in the team, and I think it stands out to me more of the success there of winning leagues more than the European games. And I tell you go back to the first European game against Reykjavik, we're 2-0 down at half time, and you know we're struggling in the game, and it was Alan Moore that popped up. You know, we got an OG, and he comes up with an equaliser. Second game, so nervy that we get through, and then the Hadji game is a totally different game altogether then.
And yeah, I'd say didn't know that you're a Bohemians fan. I know there's a whole lot of stuff that went on behind the scenes with Ollie Byrne, and the financial situation at Shelburne wasn't great in your final years. But when you eventually do come to sign for Bohemians, since you're a fan, is that a major step up for you? Is that something that you always wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, if the financial situation didn't happen at Shelburne, I possibly wouldn't have gone to Bowes at the time. I mean, Ollie, signed the contract at Shell, and we all did, but with a money situation, and Ollie didn't want to let me go. You know, and as I told him, I said, look, it's so many months without pay and we still won the league, you know, which that stands out in my mind, because I think we went, well, about maybe three months more without getting paid. And if we did get money, we had to split it between all of us. You know, there's so many stories around that time of what was happening. That's the reason as well why Stewie had a rant at the end of the year when we won the league. You know, there was so much going on for them. I said then, Ollie, I had to go to a tribunal to get out of the contract, and I think it cost Ollie £1,000. And I was saying to Ollie, look, give that £1,000 to whoever needs it money-wise, because there's mortgages to pay, bills to pay, and people need it to buy food. I got out of the contract through the tribunal, and straight away, myself and Ollie went for lunch, and he turns around and said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to sell you to a club in England. I said, Ollie, it's too late. Like I said, you could have done this a couple of months ago or wherever it may be. I said, I'm about to sign the contract for both. And he's like, no, we rip that up. And I said, no, I said, I can't. I said, I follow the club, it's getting them reward, and that's the club that I'm going to go to now. You know, I said, obviously from the Shell situation, all the players had gone as well. So, you know, signing for both, it's as I say, you get these nervy moments in football, and it was a nervy moment because, you know, you're saying, I want to sign for both, I want to give them everything, but I want to win trophies. And I remember a couple of pundits were saying that, I know Alan's at the end of his career, that's it, he won't win that. And so again, that was a determination to drive me on. And thankfully, as I said, we do go on to win a lot more trophies there as well.
Was there much of a change? I know there was quite a lot of turmoil, as we mentioned, at Shelburne in the final years. Was there much of a change when you went to Bowes in terms of the way the club was run?
In terms of the people running it, they were very professional, to be honest. Like, it was, we had John Connor took over at the time. It's no secret that myself didn't see eye to eye, but it wasn't over anything else other than football. I thought we were a professional club, and we were doing things that, you know, you would do at a part-time club. We were training like a part-time club, and we needed to be more focused, more, you know, train as a proper full-time club, turn up every day, do the hard work. And I think myself personally, I didn't feel as fit as I could be because of it, you know. But I'm not, as I said, like me and Sean, we'd be at loggerheads, but wouldn't the two of us still give 100% when went out to play a match, you know. But you don't feel mentally, you don't feel as fit as you can be if you're training as a part-time team, being a professional team. So, you know, whatever happened then with Sean, he got let go by Bowes, pack him in. And if you think, we still had the same sort of same base of the squad from the year before, and then we just got so fit that the following year we go on and win the league by numerous amount of points again. And that shows you that it was just that little thing that needed to be tweaked, that needed us to go from being a team that finished third to being a team that dominated the league. You know, and I think players seeing that then when Pat came in, the more professional side of it. Like, I mean, they were very professional off field, the Bowls, you know, committee, but we needed to be professional on the pitch. And that's something that was when Pat came in, that we were ready to, you know, drive ourselves to be, and we go on and obviously win the double then.
Yeah, and from 2002 to until 2011, apart from one or two years, I think Pat Fenlon was your manager. Is he having an impact on you in terms of coaching? Are you looking at what he's doing with the mind of that you might actually continue on from him and you might go on to be a coach after this?
Well, you know, with me and Pat, like I said, when I played with Pat, I've seen the professional side of it. And the one thing as managers over the years, like Dermot Keighley had it, where he doesn't have to come into the dressing room and doesn't have to have a go because senior players done that. And I think when Pat became manager and me being captain of Shell, I was able to do that in the dressing room. So Pat was able to, you know, relate to me, you know, what's happening in the dressing room, do we need to do that? And I was able to bring that back. So it was basically, I was the go-between between Pat and the dressing room, you know, and make sure that everything is right, and anyone that needs anything will come to me and I'll go to Pat and so on. And we've done that as well at Bowes. You know, Pat didn't need to go in to the Bowes dressing room and say, this is what has to be done, have a pop with a player and have a thing, because I was able to do that for them. So there was, we sort of had that relationship where Paco trusted me to deal with the dressing room, but he was out to deal with everything else that was going on outside of the dressing room that needed to be dealt with. And if there was a serious issue, then Pat would address it and deal with it. But, you know, there's always little stuff that's going on in dressing rooms that the manager doesn't need to deal with, doesn't need to know, doesn't need to, you know, bother him. And you take that away from him, and that's the job and role, maybe the senior player or the captain of the club. We have to deal with that and have to, you know, and move on and address it, rather than having to go to the manager all the time when some little problem was happening. That's, as I said, that was the relationship yourself and Pat had. And even at the, in 2006, when Charles and Ollie Bourne, you know, unfortunately was getting sick at the time, or just before it, that Pat and Ollie weren't really talking. So again, I was the go-between, and you know, Pat would be telling me things, and I'd go to Ollie, and Ollie would tell me things, and I'd be going back to Pat, and it was just one of them weird relationships that we seem to have that seem to work for us.
And you go on to play until you're 38, I think, around that. 569 appearances altogether in your career, spanning from the 90s into 2013. What made you retire? Because I don't think it was injuries.
No, it was, I think it was over 600 and odd appearances in the league. And that, what made me retire was when Aaron Callaghan was let go with Bowers, and they asked me, would I take over as a caretaker manager? I said yeah, and I felt I couldn't do both. I really wanted to continue playing, but I also wanted Bowers to stay up. So, you know, I was thinking, right, I'll sort of step back a little bit from playing and try to focus on, you know, organising and trying to get the players to stay up in the league. And we've done that, and I think as the season went on, I wouldn't have been as fit then, because I stopped training, I stopped playing. So I managed, the last game we played was dropped it, and we stayed up. I managed to come on for the last couple of minutes, because a couple of weeks, I mean, my last game, sorry, before that was against Dundalk, and I got sent off, and I didn't want to finish my career on a sending off. So I came on in the last game against Drogheda there for 10, 15 minutes, and just to finish off, finish my career off as a player rather than being sent off. Well, then, yeah, I think I could have continued on for a couple of more years. Just the circumstances around the time I was put into that, I decided, you know, enough, I'll stop playing and I'll do the management with both.
And obviously Bowes, similar enough situation to what happened at Shelburne, really bad financial situation at the end of your career, and you end up moving to Sligo, which it doesn't go much better. Obviously a lot of people will know the bizarre situation that went on there, but for those of people who don't, you were in charge of Sligo, they let you go, then they reinstate you, and then again they let you go, or they release a statement saying that you stepped down. What was that like for you, being in that moment? It must have been just so bizarre.
Yeah, well, even going back to the probably biggest and probably the worst decision I've done was leaving Bowers in the first place. But like that, I left because the money situation, I was offered more full-time football, you know, and promised a few things up there, you know, and so on and so forth. But, you know, results weren't going well. I'd be the first one to put my hand up for that. Things weren't going right, you know, so they decided to let me go. That was fine, like, you know. So, but then, as I say, it was let me go, then keep me there and say, no, we want you to continue on. We're liking what you do. And then it's, no, we want you to go. So I think that the board are probably all over heads as well with it. You know, but as I told them, I said, the club were struggling at the time. I said, in order to change things around, there has to be a lot of, not going professionalism wise. You had a lot of players that were, the dream culture was up there, where you're trying to, you know, reel them in and trying to give them professionalism to do. He won league in the last couple of years. And, you know, he didn't want them to live on that success either. He wanted to continue on and bring young players through. But it was a development stage. Unfortunately, they didn't want me there, which is fine, you know, but if you needed to come out and do things properly and say, look, we're letting you go, end of story, that's grand, move on. But it wasn't, it was a case of, no, we're keeping you there, no, we're letting you go. I'm doing a Satanta Sports, and then they come up with an idea of releasing a statement saying that, you know, that I agreed to finish up, which was no such thing. So it was just bizarre, because when you're dealing with a lot of professional people over your course of your career at Bowles and at Shelves, you expect it to be the same then at other clubs. And as I said, no, there was professional people at Sligo, no doubt about it. there were some good players at Sligo. Fans were grand, were good at Sligo as well. But as I said, it's just a situation that happened, and you had a few things that were going on where they were saying things that weren't happening, and that just more annoyed me than anything else. But like that, you just, at the time, you're not happy with it, but you move on in football, and it's one thing that I don't miss is, you know, you move on to the next part of your career.
Yeah, and you actually look really calm in the interview with Setanta Sports at the time, because as people know, you were there to do a punditry job on a different match, but it ended up being a whole conversation about your career. Was it hard to maintain your emotions at that time?
No, I found, you know, like, obviously Sligo wanted to let me go, and that was no secret, and that was fine, like, but it's just a bizarre way of doing it. And when you're asked questions, you know, on telly or even now, you try to answer them as honestly as you can, you know, about the situation of that time. And that's all it was. It was just the fact that they released something, I didn't know anything about it. And it probably made them look a little bit, you know, worse than me, because of the fact that they're putting stuff out that wasn't true at the time. So, but as I said, I still talk to people up in Sligo. I have no issues with them, or the club or anyone else. As I said, you move on. It's a part of your life where you just say, right, that happened, and, you know, take it on the chin, and you move on, as I said. And I don't have any years still seeing them before anyone up there. And so today, if I went up, I'd watch a game, and if they're playing down here, I'd watch a game. So you take it on the chin, and that was that, like, you know. And as I said, I'd no problem with them coming out and saying he's sacked, because people do get sacked in life. And this thing of, oh, he's leaving for family reasons, or he wants to go home for family reasons. You know, you just need to be honest with him and say, we sacked him, we let him go. And that's all they had to do, and that was fine, like, with me.
And you take over Shelburne, you return to Shelburne as a manager. It's obviously a very different club to what the club that you played at. They're in the first division, they're smack bottom of the league. The first year, bit of a progress, you finished sixth, second year again, you see more progress in a fourth place finish, and then in your final year you get to the playoff. Are you satisfied with how your Shelburne stint went, or do you feel like there was unfinished business?
No, I'm definitely not satisfied, but I mean, when I was asked to go in, they asked me to, you know, come in and study the club, but Kevin had left, and I said, yeah, I'll take over, and I said, I'll do it and just see where we progress there. And the club had the same budget as what Kevin Doherty had at the time. Didn't give me any extra money or anything, but I felt there was no winning mentality in the club anymore. You know, they were out and they could be 1-0 up in the game and they'd end up losing 2-1. They could be 3-0 up in the game, they'd end up losing 4-3. So we had to turn that around, myself and Liam Kelly. And we managed to do that, you know, seeing obviously the half season we were in first, we had a look at it and said, right, we need such and such a player and try get a few go. And we managed to do that, and we started getting a little bit of a winner mentality into the club. And I think the following year, then we ran away with the league, but we gave them tough games over the course of the season against the top teams. We were starting to get a mentality where we were hard to beat. We played decent enough football and we were getting results, and we went 1-0 up or 2-0 up. We didn't look like throwing the game away. The following year then, you know, last season I said to them, we needed a centre forward. Still didn't give me any extra money to go out and get players, but we had to, you know, make do what we did. But I managed to get Davey O'Sullivan in, and you can see the instant success with Davey O'Sullivan. He scored goals, he scored 3 against the former club Longford, and we win the game 3-2. But it shows you that we were starting to get the Shelburne name back. We start getting people asking us to open pitches, we start getting teams wanting the players and friendlies, you know. So we started to get a Shelburne team that the fans could be proud of again. And the follow up the one of the years that we finished fourth would have been enough to play for the playoffs, but it was only the top two or something that season with the fourth division. And then following the year we get into the playoffs again, we finished third. A new owner had come in, Davey O'Connor, who played for Jamrock Rovers, and Limerick came in as a CEO. And he asked me, do I know anyone that, you know, bring in players and, you know, look at teams? And I said, yeah, a resource sounds great. But I managed to get Dave Henderson in, and I thought things are going grand. You know, I asked the owner if he want me there. Oh yeah, definitely want you there, want you to keep going. And then lo and behold, he comes up to me and says, oh no, we're going in a different direction, which took me by surprise, because of the amount of work I was putting in, wasn't getting much money for doing it. You know, as I said, I spoke to one or two of the board members who said, no, they all voted for me to stay there, but the owner had his own ideas, which again is fine, but it was a bit underhanded from a few people that even I brought into the club, you know, sort of went underhanded against me and things like that. So that wasn't nice at the time, but again, I think it's unfinished business for me. Because, and I'm glad that the club are doing well, and glad they put money in for now, and they've gone on and won the first division, and they're in the Premier. That's something that I wanted to achieve with them. I think I set the ball rolling and getting the team to do that, and Ian Morris has put them on into the Premier Division, which he's done a great job since he's gone in. So delighted for the club and things like that, but unhappy the way it went at the end. You know, again, you like people to be honest, but they weren't honest come the end of it, and that's the one thing that annoys me.
And do you feel that you deserve another crack at another management job, or is that something that interested you, or are you sort of satisfied with where you are at your life at the minute?
I'm happy enough, to be honest, at the moment. I mean, I love the manager side of it, and I love the coaching side of it, and dealing with the players. But it's the off-field side of it that, you know, it doesn't appeal to me. Is that, you know, you have people making decisions, wanting to pick the team, who don't want to sit on the bench and make the decisions, but they want to sit in the stand and say, oh, he should play. Oh, I'd pick him, I'd do that. That's what should be happening. So that doesn't appeal to me. The biggest thing, any player will tell you that they miss is playing. So I'm playing over 25 and I'm enjoying that. We're winning trophies with Sandy Hill Shine Gang. So that's something that I'm enjoying at the moment. I'm enjoying what I'm doing work-wise. So everything is going well. I'm in no rush to jump in and say, oh yeah, I'll take on the team and deal with the pressure of it that comes. I'm in no rush to jump back into it. I like to do coaching, but you know, I still do bits and pieces of that. But in terms of going back in, I might at some stage, but it's just as I said, it's dealing with the off-field stuff that comes with it that I didn't enjoy. So you know, as I said, I'm quite content now where I am.
And are you still playing right back, or have you decided to go up front in over 35s? You probably still have enough pace to do that.
We play three at the back, so I either play as a centre half or I go as a right wing back, you know. No, as I said, I'm enjoying it. It's one thing that any player will tell you they enjoy, you know, and it's still as competitive. It's still you have players that just want to win games. So it's very enjoyable. And say, these are a great bunch of lads. They grew up together. So I was asked to go out and join the team, and we've done that. We've done the treble last year, winning the Amateur Cup, the Matt O'Leary and the league. So you know, things are good. Madden to me trophy cabinet all the time.
Yeah, you can add them to your 7 League of Ireland titles and 2 FAI Cups as well. Owen, you've been brilliant with your time. Thanks very much for coming on.
No, but Brenda, thanks for having me.
So that was Owen Heary. If you want to listen back to any of that show, go to offtheball.com/podcast. Find us on the OTB Podcast Network. You can also find our stuff on iTunes, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The Gold Out app is currently the best place to get us. Just look up Team 33. And give us a follow on Twitter as well, at Team 33, all spelled out in letters. We'll be back again next week with some more League of Ireland action, and hopefully we might have someone on to chat about the Bundesliga as well. Until then, take it away, Johan. Die